Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Hope you guys are all having a great week, coming off a long weekend. And we're hoping that it's going to get just a little bit cooler. I don't want to rush it now, though. At this time of year, where fall is around the corner, and I'm not sure my guest tonight, if he still lives in Florida, he doesn't know, or at least doesn't have to tolerate these difficult Midwest winters. So I'm going to enjoy and not complain about the feels like 113 degree temperatures we've been having, and just enjoy every moment of what we have left and going into a beautiful fall, change of season, and stay in the day. So hope you guys are all having a good one. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice. If you want to know more about me, check out my website at inaflash.org. That's also one of the places, along with braininjuryradio.com, where you can find the link to the show. This show is live. Within an hour, it'll be on demand forever and ever out there. And so one of those two sites, you can find it. Or if you're listening in one of the 40 places I post across social media each week, those shows, go ahead and copy that link. Things get pushed down out there on social media. So if you're listening from one of the groups on LinkedIn or Facebook or the other ones, hang on to it. And welcome. I'm excited about my guest tonight, Simon T. Bailey. He's very accomplished, is one thing I'll say. He's written 10 books. He's a keynote speaker. He does coaching. There is a laundry list of gifts and talents that this man has that I'm honored to have him here tonight to share. So when I say he's the author of Ignite the Power of Women in Your Life, A Guide for Men, that's his latest talk about tonight. But I'd like to do honorable mentions on his other books. But I've heard a lot of people talking about confusion about roles these days. At my age, I'm more cognizant of how men were raised to be and what their role was in a relationship, the same with women. And things have kind of been turned upside down. And the feedback I'm getting from a lot of men out there is they're very confused about how to conduct relationships and feel like they're walking on eggshells around women, afraid to make the wrong move. And I'm hoping Simon can help give some clarity to that situation tonight and help the women feel comfortable enough with themselves to be who they are and men not have to feel like they're walking on eggshells. That doesn't make for a good combo relationship when both parties are feeling super uncomfortable. So we know some communication is in the offing. So back to Ignite the Power of Women in Your Life, A Guide for Men. After an encounter with his young daughter caused him to have a great game-changing epiphany. Hundreds of thousands have agreed with his assessment. Light and airy, written in short sound bites with profound reflections and heartfelt personal stories, Ignite the Power of Women in Your Life speaks to men who have given short shrift to the women in their world, either unconsciously or because of self-focused prioritizing. It's often painful truths and step-by-step ways to realign and elevate the women who carry half the load in the world. And more than that, how men can enhance and recognize the total worth of the women they support. For more, and you'll notice on the program notes, I didn't put in the website. I will be, though, when this show is over, I'll put it in. So if you're not by a pen, or you're driving or somewhere where you can't write it down, don't panic. We're going to mention the website a couple of times during the show. And when the show's over, where it says for more, see ignitethepower.com. And I'm going to double check that with Simon when I bring him on right now. He also has another site that's most interesting, SimonTBailey.com, but he wants to move us over to one of his other sites. And so I will definitely fill in the websites after the show. I don't know if there was something shiny and I looked the other way or they didn't put the website down in his press kit. Not blaming them. Could have been me. Could have been something shiny. Or Simon might appreciate this. I could have been busy painting the ceiling in the Sistine Chapel and missed putting in that website. But apologies to Simon. And with that, I'm going to bring him on with us and see what Simon says. Good evening,
well,
Simon.
Thank you so much for having
show.
Me. Thank you for having me. Good to be with you.
Thank you for being here. I'm happy you are. So you're quite an accomplished writer, speaker, coach, and have worked with Disney and thousands of other corporations helping people craft their careers. And in this case, we're going to talk tonight a little bit about that, a little bit about purpose, and talk about your latest book, Ignite the Power of Women in Your Life, A Guide for Men, because there's some really powerful messages in there for everyone, and relationships aren't easy. I think we can all agree that relationships aren't easy. You know, on Sunday, my parents had their 64th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
And it blows, yeah, that's what I think. It blew me away because, for one thing, I won't live long enough to have a relationship that long. I was a late start, you know, a late start on the deal. So probably not going to be able to do that. But, you know, they started dating in high school, were high school sweethearts, king and queen of the prom, got married immediately after high school. My dad joined the Marines, and my mom had me. They had me. Then my mom and I rode the train when I was 13 months old to Quantico, Virginia. And that's where we met as a family for the first time. And they've been married, 64 years Sunday. So I guess I'll say on the air, congratulations to my folks. And that's really a hell of an accomplishment because I was around for a lot of that. And there's certainly ups and downs, and compromise is big. And that doesn't always come easy when you've got, I laugh, you know, I'm Irish and Italian. I got an Italian mother and an Irish father. I used to make jokes and say I was a great lover with a bad temper, sometimes simultaneously. Bad joke. But I mean, that's a couple strong personality backgrounds, you know, to be head-to-head for 64 years, but somehow they've done it. And there's a lot of couples who could never do that, wouldn't want to do that, many that would love to do that, but they, you know, one of them passes and they don't get the opportunity to do that kind of time with another person. But that's really amazing. You don't see a lot of those anymore, those kind of long-term marriages where you stay no matter what. And I remember my dad, and then I'm going to let you talk, you're the guest, but I remember my dad telling me a couple things when I was young, and of course I poo-pooed them completely because I thought I knew everything, like most teenagers do. He said one of the biggest mistakes that women make is thinking that they're going to change the man, that we fall in love with potential and not what you would call an authentic self, fall in love with the potential and kind of ignore who the person really is. And I found that to be true in all of the unsuccessful relationships I had before I met my wonderful husband. And he had kind of gone down a similar path. And then I think, I don't know, maybe we were both tired and had made all the mistakes, you know, that you could make when we were blessed to find each other. And it's a much smoother ride. So anyway, Simon, I'm happy to have you on tonight. Why don't you, could you tell, for anyone who may not have encountered you, even though you're all over the, the map, anyone who may not have heard you before, can you give us a little bit of background about yourself and, you know, your background, maybe as a kid coming up, and what you had planned to do when you grew up, you know, what you wanted to be and do, and just a little bit of the path prior and leading up to the one that you're on now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, so go Bills. This is our year, I'm just saying. And I've lived in Orlando, Florida for about the last 30 years, and today you find me in Longboat Key, Florida, right by the beach, my favorite place in the world. It should be near the ocean. Married again with amazing wife, Jody. We have four children from 20 to 27, three girls, one boy, and, or I should say, three women, one young man. And we have our first grandchild, who is a brand new grandbaby who's 9 months old. Her name is Halo. And we are just excited about Halo. The sun rises and sets in our grandchild. Yeah, thank you. Mm. And professionally, I just simply work with individuals to help them lead countries, companies, and communities and their lives differently. And I wake up every single day to help people live into their purpose and to become all they possibly can be. I worked for Disney for a number of years, left Disney about 20 years ago to do this work, and I get a chance to serve people every day somewhere in the world.
Awesome. And it seems that in being of service, I don't know about you, but when I started being a host here, that was service. I said, mm-hmm. I used to make big bucks, and now I make soul bucks, which mm-hmm. means it doesn't pay as well, but it fills me with purpose that I needed at the time. You know, I was making a shift in mm-hmm. my life, as a lot of people do, whether it's shifting career, relationship, a health issue, you know, whatever it might be that turns your world upside down and causes you to be going a direction you never dreamed you'd be going. And it winds up being, very cool. In giving to others, it seems that we get it back in spades, you know, service to others.
Totally.
By giving it away, we can keep it.
I totally agree.
So how is working at Disney? Things have changed, at least with the governor lately, right? but you left that 20 years ago, so you don't have to deal with that, but they're probably not pleased right this second. I bet it was fun. Did you actually work where you got to see Mickey Mouse a lot?
Oh, yes. I saw the characters
in the
every
park.
Day. And yes, I saw the characters many times and had a great experience working at Disney. It took me about 2 years to get hired there, but once I was hired, I just embraced it, and it was truly a magical experience for me professionally.
That had to be a hard place to not feel happy when you've got all those characters going around in the castle and Tinkerbell. I mean, that place is built on magic and dreams, and it's easy to let yourself go there. Now, I've never been employed there. Maybe it's not as easy as when you're a visitor and, you know, you can pretty much surrender everything you were dealing with outside the gate when you walk in the gate, and everything becomes magical. And so I imagine, you know, it seems to me that's kind of what you're, in a way, trying to do for people now in the job market, in the relationship market, is to help people capture, in a way, that same magic that you were doing, living in, experiencing down at Disney.
Yes, that's precisely what I do today, to really help people answer the question, where have they been, why are they here, and what can they do to create a life of significance, not just success.
So give us a clue. Say you've got someone who needs to change careers. And in fact, I heard a couple people, I think it was maybe your website, the one, your namesake website that I was looking at, that there was a woman talking about, and there might have been two. I listened to a couple video clips, but they talked about changing, being in their job for however many years it was, a long time, and feeling that they needed a change in their industry, rather, for a long time, and they felt like they needed a change, and they didn't know exactly what that change was going to be. They had an idea of the direction they wanted to go, but it sounded like, it sounded like that young lady was questioning her, not her worth, but maybe her ability to get to where she wanted to go, where she thought she wanted to go. And so what do you tell people who are going to make a shift, let's say, in, maybe we'll start with career, and then we'll talk about your book and relationships, but for people who are looking to find purpose, and I guess it doesn't have to be job-related unless you want to give a comment on both, do you think purpose is necessarily your occupation? Yes?
Yeah, great question. Yes. Yeah, I think purpose, we have to step back, because the first thing we have to identify is, what is our gift? What is our brilliance? What is the thing that makes us come alive? And then once you answer that question, what your gift is, that thing that you do that no one else can do, then you begin to say, what is the knowledge that I need to grow this gift, this talent, this ability that I have? And then once you grow that by acquiring knowledge, then you bump into your purpose. Because once I get to purpose, it's because I understand who I am at the core. And so how do you get there? It simply starts with number one. It's not who you are that holds you back. It's who you think you're not that holds you back. So how do I now create a story of who I believe I am becoming as I tap into my gift, my brilliance, my ability, right? Then that second question is, what problem have you been created to solve? Because when you solve problems, those problems that you solve add value, and that value becomes your purpose. It becomes that impact, that difference that you make. So I generally encourage people to start there with answering those questions.
I think that's good. I think that's a great recipe. And some of us fall into it and find out. Now, there's a lot of talk now. I'm not getting into politics, but there's a lot of talk right now that higher education isn't necessarily what a bachelor's degrees are a dime a dozen, so they say, and that higher education isn't necessarily the answer for everyone. Just to go drop back to something you said and clarify it, because you never really used to need to clarify it. That's kind of just an assumption that was made. The more book education you got, the more you were going to advance, the higher your income would be. Now there's a lot of talk about allowing people the grace to be who they are, and that maybe not everybody is cut out for academic education. It might be a trade of some sort, or that would lead them to perhaps being an entrepreneur. What do you think about that discussion that's going on out there? Because there's talk about how expensive college is, and, you know, a handful of people got their debt forgiven, but the people before and after aren't going to, you know, they're gonna have to pay for that. So do you go with that new way of thinking, or still think that the more education you get, or related education that has to do with that niche that you want to fall in, and maybe it isn't higher education academically, maybe it's more experience in the niche that you want to work in, or that you think your purpose is in?
Well, I approach that question from a few different angles. The first one is education is the foundation for growth and long-term development. And how we approach education today is different than yesterday. So we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for a teacher who took the time to help us understand what they would call back in the day reading, writing, and arithmetic. So I think today we have to start with the individual. What does education look like for them? And if it's going the academic route, high school, college, master's degree, PhD, then that works for you because that's leading you down a path of purpose. For others, they may say, after high school, I want to pursue a trade or get a vo-tech degree that will allow me to still be relevant in the economy, put food on my table, and make a decent living. And that might not mean going to a four-year institution, but you continuing to go back and get certification for different skills, for different trades, right? And then we have those individuals who have now kind of grown up in an era where everything that they learn is on YouTube or online classes. So there's a different packaging of education that works for them. There's a whole generation of kids who may never step foot in a school because of the pandemic, but their parents have chosen to homeschool them. So I think it ultimately comes down to where's the person in life and what does their educational journey look like to them? And here's the bottom line. No matter where you are, always be a lifelong learner, because when you stop learning, you stop growing. And when you stop growing, you stop living. And when you stop living, you are kind of literally like the walking dead. So find what lifelong learning looks like to you.
I think that's a great point. And I'm so far removed from it now in some ways. I mean, I did all the college education, but I'm kind of disturbed, and I can't really say because I haven't been there. It's been a long time since I've been in school, but you know, when I was, one of the things that I really appreciated was the fact that both sides of the coin were presented without bias, with equal weight, if you will, and we got the opportunity to listen and then make a decision with our own brain how we processed that information that we learned. So I hope that they're still doing that in school. Depends on what channel you listen to, I guess, you know, whether you believe in indoctrination. But I remember this. I took a course once, and this was really just, well, I shouldn't call it a fluff course, but I was a business major, and I took a course that was an upper level, psychology type course. It was called something really freaky, like Limits of Consciousness. And the class started out with meditation, believe it or not. You know, we sat there and meditated for 10 minutes. And then that was back in the days where, you know, this will date. Do you have a speaker on?
I don't. No.
I wonder what that is. Maybe me. I heard an echo. Anyway, this instructor had a lot of different people come in and speak from different, you know, there were Moonies back then. Do you remember hearing about them? People who passed out flowers in airports and things.
Great.
A lot of people aren't. Not that you're old enough, but you may have read about it somewhere.
No, I do remember the Moonies for sure.
Okay, thank you. All right. Well, not everybody out there knows, but I'm trying to think of who else. You know, there was like transactional analysis, transcendental meditation. It was during those days when you had all those different segments. And this instructor was so interesting because I'm in the College of Business where everybody is in a suit, very cleaned up, staid, you know, type of education. And then I'm over in arts and sciences, frankly, listening to the stuff that was more interesting to me, but I didn't think you could make any money in that field. So in any case, Gordon, Dr. Becker, wore rainbow suspenders and had a long beard and kind of long hair, and he would have somebody come in from each of these groups and talk to us. And he wasn't endorsing any of them, but allowing us to hear.
Sure.
And it was a night course, and I remember this lady, you know, an older woman at the time who maybe was just, I don't know, coming back to school to take a few courses or something and happened to take that one. And he gave, I don't think he gave us a syllabus. And if he did, it was only because he had to, and we didn't go by the syllabus. And then he suggested a couple books that we needed to buy, and we really didn't read those books. But he taught in an experiential way. And this woman's husband was a psychiatrist. And one night he came in. Apparently his wife was completely unraveled because she just didn't get what it was we were supposed to be doing there. And so he called our instructor. I mean, really, the shrink needed a shrink. You know, he called our instructor a freak and whatever, some expletives, and he was really quite rude. And Gordon is a really laid-back guy. You know, he just kind of took that with a grain of salt, and it went away a bit. I remember thinking at the time that I felt really bad for this lady, even though I was from the College of Business. I got what he was doing. We were learning in an experiential way. He wasn't telling us what to do. He was giving us an opportunity to listen, an opportunity to feel, an opportunity to process that information in front of us without a rigid, you know, schedule of telling us what to do. Part of it was us figuring it out, but nobody had the kind of trouble that this lady had in doing it. But it was interesting. I found that very enlightening, and have remembered it all of these years, because when I hear some of the things I hear on the news that are troublesome to me, I just think, wow, it was so cool to have someone introduce a variety of topics and then not give the nod necessarily or show bias toward any of them. Or he asked us questions and we said, you know, what we thought, how we felt about what we heard, and he saved his opinion on any of it. He was there to deliver some different trains of thought to us and let us take what we liked and leave the rest. And for just being present, you got a really good grade, you know, for being present and being able to just experience, you know, learn in an experiential way and have the ability to let your mind process the information. I heard you say something, and maybe you can say it here, about originals and copies. And it was actually just hearing that earlier this afternoon, and you probably know what I mean, that it made me think of Dr. Becker after a zillion decades when I heard you say that, because everything was very rote in you know, the College of Business, it's supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be what you're learning over there. But as far as the world goes, after you leave school, there was a very valuable lesson in the way that Dr. Becker taught. It wasn't so much TM, TA, Moonies, whatever. It was the open-minded. He taught open-minded listening to the universe, processing the information through your own brain, and making your own decision on how you feel about those things and what parts of it you think you can incorporate or none of it. And I think that that's really valuable in helping a person find their authentic self. And if you'd comment on what you said earlier, was it in reference to purpose and or finding a job? But you were talking about copies and originals.
Yes, so John Mason, who is the author of the book called An Enemy Called Average, makes a powerful quote that says, most people are born originals, but they die copies. And it's a really powerful quote because it helps you think about, am I living life by design or am I living life by accident? Because I've compared where I am to where others are, and I am mimicking others instead of truly living an authentic life. So most people are born originals, but die copies.
That's right. I remember, and you made the, speaking of Halo and others, I remember the comment was about children, that up to a certain age, they have that. They are original. They are authentic, that they were born that way, that it wasn't until they had been out long enough to be affected by the environment that that starts getting to be clouded. So then we kind of relearn or unlearn, depending on how you want to look at that, to try to refind, rediscover that authentic self. Isn't it funny how verbiage changes over time? We were finding the, I don't know who the pioneer of finding the our inner child was, and now we have an authentic self. But it just means to thine own self be true, right? We've got to know who ourself is and not be afraid to model that like everybody else, like the status quo. Although some think, you know, my husband works for the government, and they're probably listening. It's good that he's close to retirement. Well, I mean, it's funny because, you know, he was 20 years in the military and that now has worked for the government. And so you find me who's a salesperson and has been a type A, right? So we're opposite, but complementary. So he brought stability to our relationship, a level, you know, to our relationship. And I brought fun to his spontaneity, that kind of thing, that you can actually do what you want when you want and be who you want. And that really wasn't the environment, you know, that that he had been working in, although it's changed, I guess. That, too, has changed. Everything is changing so fast, Simon. It's hard to figure your authentic self these days with everything changing as quickly as it is. You might find your authentic self today and find out you identify with your other self tomorrow. I don't know. Anyway, so we find a self that we feel comfortable with and confident with to have the ability to move forward. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yes, that's a fair assessment.
Okay. So whether it's a job or a relationship, instead of, I mean, obviously in a job, and then let's just switch to relationships in your new book. Although I did want to go back here just real quick and mention for people so that they know, because I was interested. I didn't realize that you had 10 books. Tell us just in a couple sentences. I know that that's not the one you're here to talk about tonight, but spark. I like the word.
Yeah, so spark is really understanding when you find your spark, you find your joy. When you find your joy, you find your voice. And when you find your voice, you find your freedom. So that really unpacks how do you look at that wherever you are in life, business, career, personal. How do you find that spark so you move towards true freedom?
I love that. And then you've got a book on releasing your brilliance, too, actually, and success in jobs, leadership, and shifting. There was another word. Spark was one of them, and there was another word, but I guess it'll come to me. Another word I liked. I guess I got stuck on spark, but there was another magic word somewhere. But it'll come to me.
It's probably Vuja Day, or which is a word that I teach a lot. Just seeing things through a fresh lens and really understanding how to shift your brilliance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the opposite of deja vu, right? So tell again
correct,
what that is.
Correct. So deja vu is been there, done that. Vuja de is
right.
Going there, doing that. It's looking at things through an opposite lens.
Exactly. I thought that was really, really good. But I swear there is another word, but it'll come to me. Let's talk about why did you write Ignite the Power of Women in Your Life, A Guide for Men? What's the impetus of that? The others, now that you told what Spark is, your other books, super interesting, all very powerful, self-explanatory, I think, about what they're about. This Ignite the Power of Women in Your Life, A Guide for Men, is not so self-explanatory from the title. So it's good that you're here to tell us about it, because as I said earlier in the show, relationships are tough, a tough proposition, and as roles shift and change, expectations shift and change, and just when you think you got it figured out, something changes. And so to what were you referring? What was the impetus in you writing this book?
I wrote it to give voice to women who wanted to be understood and not controlled. I wrote it for men to begin to understand when they communicate and connect and cherish the women in their lives, that actually their potential is ignited and sparked. And finally, I wrote it because of an experience I went through. My daughter came into my home office one day. I was emotionally unavailable, and she said, Dad, I'll just come back later. I said, okay. I came back home from out of town. I said, Madison, my daughter, you wanted to talk to me? And she said, Daddy, it's not okay. It's okay. I said, no, it's not okay, because if I don't change my behavior, you're going to marry someone just like me. And her mother said to me, after 25 years of being married, you give everybody the best of you, you give us the rest of you, and I don't want the leftovers anymore. And so what I recognize is where I missed the boat, the women in my life, I was totally tone deaf and was not really listening to what their needs were, and that was showing up professionally as well. So I really wrote the book to create a conversation between men and women to understand how do you support each other personally and professionally and in life.
So are you saying that you were very active and busy in your career? I was going to ask you when you found the time. I'm in the process of writing a book. It'll be my third. The first two are pretty short, and they were from my own experience. This book that I'm writing now, I'm not actually writing yet. It's a lot of research, and it's an advocacy type issue. And so it's not a story I'm telling about me. It's something that's going to be different than I've ever written before, but feel called to, if that makes sense to you. Anyway, beside the point, I was going to say, when did you find time to write 10 books with your ever active career of, you know, being a keynote speaker and a coach? Are you saying that, like a lot of men who are ambitious and wanting to make a good lifestyle for yourself and the family, that the relationship element got neglected?
That's exactly right. I sacrificed the family, unfortunately, because I put my career ahead of them, and that was a big mistake on my part. So what I've had to learn now is to keep the main thing the main thing. So I think in writing the books, it was always a priority to write the books, but I really needed to focus on the family.
How, you know, that's not unusual for people that, you know, I talked about my own family earlier. My parents both came from extremely poor backgrounds, and they didn't want that for themselves or their kid. They wanted to, like I told you, I grew up in the John T. Malloy generation. It took, you know, when he got home from the Marines, he, you know, and it was funny, one of the reasons he joined was for the GI Bill, and when he was in the Corps, they discontinued the GI Bill. So the guy goes through the Marines, gets out of the Corps, and there's no money for college. And so he worked full-time to put himself through college full-time, and got through 3 years of, or 4 years of college, excuse me, and three, and worked all night as a bartender, went to school all day, and then launched into the career that was going to take them where they wanted to be. That took a lot of time and effort away from the family. And especially today, you know, it seems, and you're out there among corporations a lot more than I am, but it seems that a lot of times now, if a job is, if someone leaves a job or is let go of a job, a slot in the company, that it seems like more and more they're having, instead of replacing that position, a way to save a buck is to divide the duties of that particular slot and dump it on, divide it against the remaining people. And so how do you, you don't obviously give away your book, but that's not so uncommon what you went through for anybody who's a hard worker and trying to get to a certain place in their life that would happen. It's unfortunate for sure. I'm the daughter of a hard worker, you know, and there was a lot of things missed for sure. And you can't unring that bell. But at the same time, I don't know how he could have done what he did without doing it the way that he did. He would have had to been satisfied with less. They would have had to been satisfied with less because there's only so many hours in a day, right? So how do you do that? Are you just talking about being more consciously present in the time that you are there and trying to leave work at the job, as they say, even if your office is at home? When you walk out of that room, you leave it there and just try to be more actively present with your family when you're there. How can your average Joe do what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to identify what your top priorities are. The second thing is think about how you will invest the appropriate time in those priorities that are most important to you. And then the third thing is to really look at not only how do you bring your best self, but what is the value that you want to make sure that those who are important to you in life, what's the value that you want to bring to them every single day as you evaluate your time and your energy investment?
And when your wife then made that comment, was she saying, I mean, it sounds like you engaged with your daughter, you didn't like forget completely when you came back and said there was something you wanted to talk to me about. At least you remembered that and approached her on that. And then your comment that your wife made, that was a catchy way of putting it. Was that the end of that marriage?
Yeah, so I think when the marriage ended, that particular comment was really contributing to death by a thousand cuts. So there were so many other things that led up to that particular time, and that was like the icing on the cake. And what I recognize is that there had been years of me being emotionally disconnected and emotionally unavailable that I was oblivious to, because I thought by providing a house and all of the accoutrements of success that would fill the void of the emotional need, and it didn't. So I recognized when I went to therapy, my therapist identified some areas of growth and opportunity for me to really kind of heal and grow and develop in that area.
Let me go back to that situation, though, because I'm just curious. You just got me thinking about things. The wife and the kids enjoyed the accoutrements that you were working for, right? Certain kind of house, certain
yes.
kind of car, being able to buy a certain kind of makeup, certain kind of clothes. You were talking about a daughter, so there's lots of things that go with girls. That don't necessarily go with guys when it comes to fashion and things like that. Not saying all guys. Sorry, not offending any guys out there. But girls, I think, are higher maintenance. Girls are higher maintenance.
Sure.
Obviously, the lifestyle, but it is hard. Probably for a wife too. I haven't been in this situation. I've only been an observer. As a kid, and then didn't have that kind of marriage. You know, my husband has a kind of job where, you know, because of the way that structure that I could have never done, would never want to do. In fact, you know, they've been working a lot, well, since the pandemic, remotely. And our offices are in the same room, and I kind of laughed because I do, our offices are in the same place, and it used to be very quiet, and now they're having a lot of meetings, and I was laughing. We have a lot of Prime boxes come to our house, and I took something out that would look like it's a jar of vitamins kind of thing, but clear, full of pink, and I held it out so my husband could see it, and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "Earplugs." And he started to take them from me. And I said, no. Those are not for you. You're working. They're for me, so I don't have to hear these meetings. And it's really the nature of what's being said that I can't deal with hearing it. It just doesn't seem like they're in their lane. But I'm just kind of curious. Again, I guess I would just say it's hard to be a certain kind of partner and then provide those things. I wonder what would have happened if you would have said, would you be happier, you know, whatever neighborhood you live in, take one that's a step down and a car that's a step down and cutting back on some of the other accoutrements you had, would they have been equally as happy to have more of your time and less stuff?
That's a great question. I don't know.
I wonder. I didn't expect you to know either. I just wondered because it seems like there is a lot of pressure. You know, the pressure on women seems to be these days that someone said once, you know, and they're women are going to go through what men did because, you know, now that they're in the workforce, full force, and wanting the same kind of success, you know, if I'm going to go out and work, I want to be successful at it, you know, having goals like men had before, and wanting to be the one that brings home the bacon and earns those accoutrements you were talking about, and relationships will suffer. You know, kids are suffering in a lot of ways that when both parents are out there and they're being raised by daycare, you know, minimum wage daycare, and then by their teachers, you know, and both parents are not present. So I wonder if people would be willing, because the thrust has been to do more and better, if they would be able to work on being as happy with a little less stuff. You know, at the end of the day, you can't take the stuff with you. What you have is the memories and the relationships that you've cultivated over the years. Now, if you can swing both, that's a hell of a deal, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But for your average person, you know, that's definitely hard, which is why you wrote a book about it, right?
Yeah.
So you help people in this new book learn to navigate that water and how to more be able to reach job goals and preserve the integrity of relationships at the same time, which has got to be a difficult task. Like I said, the best I could think of, looking back at the only experience I have, like I said, which was growing up in it, is for someone to be actively present in that time that they are home and understand that they are away a lot because they're working to pay for my education and where we live and what I'm driving. I'm talking about as a kid growing up.
Sure, sure.
Some trade-off, you know, have to understand the reality of the situation, which isn't easy to do when you're a kid. You want to have that attention. Certainly not easy to do, I guess, when you're a wife. But finding that balance in a relationship, the relationship. So igniting the women. Explain that, or you're just talking about how to make us feel of value and validated in your busy schedule.
Yeah. So one of the things that I teach and the feedback that we're getting from women is, number one, is how do we elevate the communication between both men and women? That's number one. Number two, how do we ensure that men, when they are communicating, they're coming from a place of emotional honesty in their communication? Emotional honesty is just simply admitting that you don't know what you don't know, but you're open to exploring how to grow. And then the third thing is to really understand how to practice what I call the four practices of forgiveness, surrender, gratitude, and human compassionate care in communicating with women personally and professionally. So those are just some of the benefits that the readers can take away from the book.
Okay, so gratitude, you gave us four of those. Now I made mine easier, four A's. easier recall. So that's good, though, that you give a step-by-step approach to being able to do this. And I think that what kind of feedback do you get from, you know, women in the same boat? Like I said, one of my observations has been that women are going to be in the same place. And somebody in the chat room here said, yes, communication is the key. Definitely. But they're going to be in the same place, worried about the same issues, right? I mean, or are already. I'm old enough now. It has been a lot of years, you know, that women have been equally out in the workforce. And so they're really going to have the same issues, right? Connecting with their kids, connecting with their husband, connecting with their family life while trying to navigate the waters of the sharks that used to be exclusively men. We wanted to dive in with both feet. So we get the problems that you're talking about right along with.
Yes. Some of the feedback that we're getting from women is there's a conversation happening in households, and that is who's going to have the lead career. And what we're finding and hearing is that it's women who have just stepped up and they're going to have the lead career, and men are saying that they are going to stay at home and put their career on hold to do the things that normally women would do. Now, that depends, that's different households, different parts of the country, different parts of the world, different socioeconomic status as well as age groups. So that's the first thing. But then the other thing women are saying, they are finding a better approach to communicating with women in their lives as a result of what we've shared in the book.
Okay. So I'm just curious, are you finding that men who choose to do that are happier? Do they feel like they have as much value? You think back in the old the older days where women felt unappreciated and less than for doing the job that's really it's equally important, if not more important, you know, raising and instilling values in the next generation. It just happened to be an unpaid career. And because of that, the weight we put on money, a lot of women felt less than, not validated, not part of the world because they were at home when their husband was out and about working. Are men, have we evolved to a point where are men going to go through that now, the ones that choose to stay home or feel satisfied that they're giving to their, that they're being an active part in raising their family instead of letting a stranger do it?
So what we are hearing, and it depends on the household, depends on the relationship, and what we're hearing from men, it's a choice. So I think some men will go through, do they lose their value? There are other men who absolutely are stepping up, and they've said they, as a household, they've made this choice to move in this direction. So it just depends on what they value the most, what's most important to them right now.
Absolutely. But you did bring up a key point in my question, to answer my question, is in the old scenario, choice wasn't really involved because the opportunities weren't there. And so that should make a difference when it's a choice, I think. Huh, interesting. Very interesting, Simon. The question you raise and that you address it. And it's neat that you're getting the feedback from people. That's probably how you keep fueling writing all of these books, huh? With the feedback that you're getting from people. Because now I just gave you what your next book can be, right? Addressing the other half. I see book 11 on the horizon of how men deal with their choice of staying home, you know, to be the house husband. But I think that that's good. I really do think that that's good for the sake of the family. I don't know. How do you feel about that? It just seems like a lot of the problems that our society has right now is from broken homes, you know? A lot of times it's that the dad's not there or that the mom's not there, that they're one-parent families. You know, the marriage didn't wind up being as important. When you say you decide what's important and what you're going to make a priority, marriages have seemed to fall by the wayside. The commitment in marriage has seemed to fall by the wayside in a lot of cases to careers and other, I don't want to say self-centered. I don't think I mean that, but whatever it is that's made the divorce rate what it is has been really hard on the family. And so I think that communication you're talking about, household communication, and I understand it differs with the family, with the couple, with the geographic area. There's no magic bullet answer for any of this, but I think what you said and what someone in the chat said, that communication is the key, and a lot of times those decisions are just made and you're letting someone know, you know, I've decided to blah, and it hasn't been in the context of a family discussion or a discussion with the couple. If we're putting the commitment to our marriage and our relationship first, let's just say we're putting commitment to our relationship first and keeping our family a solid. then how do we best work that to make each individual feel fulfilled and in their purpose?
I think it's starting with asking each individual what do they need in order to feel valued and seen and appreciated. And once they give you that feedback, being intentional every single day to cherish them and to give them what they need. It's a commitment and a daily decision to ensure that person knows that they matter. And it's just a daily, hourly, minute-by-minute choice that individuals make once we know what they need.
Yes. And one of the things that's kept people, what do you think you talked about honest vulnerability and honest open communication? What has prohibited people from doing that?
Well, I can only speak for where I failed. And I think there was the fear of judgment. There was concern if it vulnerability would be reciprocated. As a man, will I be seen as less masculine if I am vulnerable and showing my feelings and concern and care? So I think individuals have this perception in their head, at least I did, that what will that person think of me if I really show up?
And I think that that's so, again, common. I'm not trying to, you don't need my validation, but some of the things that you've talked about, and I appreciate your candor and vulnerability in sharing your side of the street, so to speak, because there's awful lot of people that have struggled, as you probably know because you wrote a book about it, but that have struggled with the same kind of thing. And it is very difficult to be our authentic self if we're afraid to disclose it for fear of rejection or judgment or the things that you talked about. You know, heaven forbid, that's what I'm hearing from a lot of men in their relationships these days with the shift in the roles and that sort of thing, that they feel like they're walking on eggshells. So they too are afraid to be open and honest for fear of losing something they have or not getting something they want by being authentic. So how do you get people past the fear of not being enough or thinking they're going to be judged for being less than or whatever our fears happen to be, whatever your fears happen to be, since you're putting them in first person, what helps us overcome those fears? Just taking a leap and taking our chances that person is who we thought they were? Because obviously when we got involved with a person and made a commitment to them, it was under the assumption that we both accepted each other for who we are, right? But that means that we also have to suppose that we were honest about who we were in the first place.
Yes, and I think it starts with taking a risk and putting yourself out there with not worrying about what the ramifications might be. Assess it as you are venturing into this area. And let me just add a disclaimer. If that is a trigger point and you've not seen a licensed professional, a therapist, I would advise you and encourage you to do that first to see, you know, if that's a good step for you to take. So just don't do it because I'm saying doing it. Make sure you seek professional help. But that aside, I would say certainly nothing ventured, nothing gained. Put yourself out there for what you will discover in the process about yourself and the other person.
I wonder if it's just easier when older. I find it easier to be that way now that I'm older. I feel like I've earned it. and that's a good thing. I think my husband's probably that way too, but we just kind of made a decision to live a little bit differently. You know, I shifted my expectations to have life be like it was when I was growing up and to live by one set of values and to, you know, and we're not living without, but happy where we are, you know what I mean? I definitely know what my husband's priorities are. His job is his job. It's not his life. We are. And that's a nice thing. And when my life shifted, you know, some of us in this audience were forced to make a life change. It wasn't a choice, and it certainly wouldn't have been a choice we would have wanted to make. I assumed I was going to keep doing for the next 30 years what I did for the last 30 years and ride that puppy all the way out to the end. And, you know, when plans changed, when life happened, and a new adaptation had to take place, I got the opportunity to come here. And it was interesting. I was thinking of some things I heard you talking about. I was doing an interview about my brain story, about that first book I wrote, and the person who owns this network heard me. And what he was finding out, he had been doing this one night a week for almost 2 years. And he was finding that there was a whole world of people out there. I don't know if you know, a little fun fact for you. 2.5 million people a year suffer a brain injury. That means there's a whole lot of brain injuries out there between concussions, car accidents, strokes, aneurysms, AVMs. In fact, this is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. I'll give a shout out for that. Falls. You know, falls are one of the number one causes of TBIs. So, a lot of people were put in a position. Anyway, he did it. He was not as far out as I was from his injury, and he was doing it one night a week. And my God, you know, these podcasts, amazing part of technology, going to all 50 states and 49 countries, he was getting barraged with people who thought they were the only ones, you know, the only ones that had those feelings and that were going through that process. And they were just so grateful to hear a voice in the night that was going through the same thing, that while I was on the other side of the country not knowing this guy existed, I didn't know that there was, I didn't know what internet radio was. You know, radio for me was a transistor that I flipped on at midnight to listen to Coast to Coast before I went to bed. And that was the end of it. But when I wrote the book, I had various people calling to do author interviews, and one of them was an internet radio person in Texas. And so the owner of the network got a hold of me and said that he had heard my interview and what he was doing while I was writing was deciding that he was going to run Brain Injury Radio 7 nights a week because the need was there. So he was going to need 6 other hosts. And he asked me about being one of the original hosts 12 and a half years ago. And I said, thank you so much for asking. I really appreciate, you know, you, the vote of confidence, but, you know, I didn't know that internet radio existed until 2 weeks ago. I have no background in broadcasting, and I didn't know anything about the brain beyond my own story, because in 1995, everyone didn't have a computer on their desk. There was no social media. Hard to believe, right? There was no Google. You know, there wasn't support groups. There wasn't anyone. That's why he got such a response when he did. There was no one else except this voice in the night that people were, oh my God, I'm not the only one. Anyway, I said, I'm not your gal, but thank you. And he made a little, okay, fine, made a little small talk. And then before he let me go, he said, let me ask you something. Were you an author before you wrote your book? No. And you have a brain injury, don't you? Yes. You're qualified. What night would you like? And my mouth just said Wednesday. You know, I don't know how that happened. Divine intervention, I think. Because I was in a place, as you probably know, the first year after a book comes out is a lot of attention. And then you have to do more to motivate it or move on, you know, and write another one. But, you know, I was living in the glow at that moment of having my book come out, but it was clueless about where that change, you know, what I was going to do next, like some of the people on your tape talk about, your videos, but endorsements, but for another reason, you know, I had no idea where that next move was going to be. And that phone call was a game changer, and why that spilled out my mouth that I would do something I had no experience with at all and still be here 12 and a half years later is the opportunity that you talk a lot about of being of service and being a platform. You know, I'm really just a conduit for people like yourself to come with powerful messages of hope for the listeners to know how to navigate their lives. In this case, after they've had some kind of an injury that's turned their life upside down, often compromised relationships. That's why it's so important that we talked about those aspects of a relationship tonight, because a lot of times that choice in this neck of the woods is a little bit different. You know, maybe a guy has been the breadwinner that's been out and doing that primary career, has a stroke, let's say, can no longer do that, and all of a sudden the roles are going to have to change in the house. And that's a really difficult adjustment because, you know, the first thing is you're really questioning yourself. Probably not that much different than that divorce, right? You're questioning yourself, you know, your inadequacies and going through the grief process and then coming around to what are my skills, you know, what didn't get burned off of my motherboard in my brain, you know, that I will be able to do. And it was interesting. I didn't put it together until a couple of years later. So kind of a slow start on that. But, you know, I realized that a lot of what I do is what I did in my career. I network. I talk. You found that out, right? I arrange these shows to help educate. And most of all, one of the things that you talk about in your leadership talks that brought something back to me is no matter what we're doing in our career, relationship selling is key first, because no matter what your job is or what you might be selling or what function you're doing, you're the one doing it. You're the one interfacing with other people, whether it's in the office or out in the field or wherever it is. And so if you're not a likable person, chances are you're not going to do very well in that job because you have to interface with other people. And so I think relationship selling, if you want to put it that way, is something that you kind of alluded to, did you not, in some of your talks?
Yes, I did.
Or something like that. I'm not sure that's the way that you put it. It's the way that I took it. Wherever we go, we take ourselves.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think your book sounds wonderful. And again, I will fill in the, I want to make sure that that site was right. You wanted it to be ignitethepower.com, is that correct or no?
Ignitethepowerofwomen.com.
Of women, okay.
Yes.
Ignitethepowerofwomen.com. And I will put that in the program notes when the show is over. So again, for those of you who maybe have been driving or in your easy chair and you don't have a pen, don't worry about it. I will have it in the program notes where, apologize, I left that blank. I probably would have been put your main website in there, but I didn't even notice until we logged on tonight that I hadn't put it, which means it wasn't sent, to be honest with you, but in the press kit. But in any case, ignitethepowerofwomen.com. So make sure to check out that website. And is there any reason I can't say, because I found it also very enlightening to check out your SimonTBailey.com website too, because a lot of great information. And Simon is a speaker, you know, he's a great keynote speaker. He does coaching. And if you're in need of, there's group coaching, there's individual coaching, and then the other books. And so if you're in need of coaching and want to, maybe you're in a transitional place in your career and you're wanting to know more about that, are you, you're still doing that, right, Simon?
I am indeed. Yes, I am.
Okay. I understand we're launching the book tonight, but nonetheless, with all of the gifts that you have, I thought it was at least worth mentioning. So I might, at least mention that here, if not add it to the notes in an and. But certainly in in honor of this book that's just come out. That's a great one because, again, Ignite the Power of Women in Your Life, A Guide for Men, new release for Simon in his great variety of books and leadership. And I think a scenario that so many have to deal with all the time these days, and that's, you know, giving the proper weight to the career while not sacrificing the important relationships in the family and finding that balance. So make sure to check out the book and to give feedback. So I will have both of those, I'll have that website in the program notes when the show ends. Is there any takeaway or anything that you'd like to say in closing, Simon?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, thank you so much for this opportunity and to all of the listeners. Love is not what it says, it's what it does. And love, it gives at the expense of self. And when you give at the expense of self, you find a way to hug people with your words every single day. So I hope that takeaway, everyone is very mindful of that their words carry energy and their words matter. So thank you so much for this opportunity.
And thank you so much for being here. You know, one thing we really appreciate, the man who started this network is in Spokane. So, you know, the show is from 7 to 9. When he started the 7-night-a-week thing, he didn't change the time. So God bless our guests and our hosts that are from the East Coast. It gets to be very late, and so it's most appreciated that you make time, you know, when you're on the east end of the country, because it does get awfully late. I'm an hour behind you in Nebraska. By far the East Coast has it the hardest. You know, for me it's 9 to 11. And so, you know, none of us ever questioned that when we decided to go 7 nights a week. It was something that was already going, you know, and those were the hours to the job. So that's kind of funny. But thank you. That was beautiful, and I really appreciate you making the time to be here tonight and to share with us your experience, strength, and hope that led to the book. So not only great information in the book, but honest. I encourage people to check out, you've got videos on YouTube, quite a few of them, and you're such a dynamic speaker, but still honest and vulnerable, which is interesting that you can be so dynamic and still be so genuine and vulnerable. So great speaker. I do encourage you to check out Simon T. Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y, on YouTube too, if you don't mind me saying, because I thought it was great to hear you speak on the job, so to speak, rather than this more informal conversation with me tonight. But I appreciate you doing it.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, best wishes. You can get some sleep now. And I hope you'll come back again sometime.
Yes,
good luck
sure.
with your
Thank
new book.
Thank you. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good night, Simon.
Good night.
Okay, everyone. That was Simon T. Bailey. I encourage you to check him out. His new book, and I will put that website, ignitethepowerofwomen.com, in the program notes after the show. We've got about 25 minutes or so left in the show. If anyone has any questions or comments, you can call in. The number is 424-243-9540. Again, 424-243-9540. And or what I might do real quick, on the 21st of the month, I'm going to be having, since this is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month, I think it's the 21st of the month, darn it. Is that what the Wednesday is? It's not next Wednesday, but it would be the next Wednesday. So let me, the 21st. On the 21st of September, 2 weeks from tonight, I'll be having Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. And so if you out there have had a brain aneurysm, I encourage you to come that night. You just call into the same number, 424-243-9540. If you'd like to share part of your story or some of your takeaway about brain aneurysms. And I plan to be talking to some people, have been talking to some people before then, and have a bit of a variety. When I had my aneurysm, there was a choice of, well, it wasn't a choice. You died or you got a clip, which was an open brain surgery, and a clip was put on the artery to stop the bleeding into the brain and to keep you alive. And I was lucky because microneurosurgical techniques were relatively young at the time. And those were the only choices. After that came the coil, a less invasive, I hear, though thankfully haven't experienced. I had enough, thank you, the first time. But the coil came next. And someone in the studio now, I believe, has the coil, and hopefully he will be with us on the 21st and talk a little about that. Somewhere along the line, it's interesting, we'll have to look at the history as a panel when we get together on the 21st, but it was funny, when I first started being a host and we had our first meeting, there were a couple hosts who thought I didn't belong, because they called me an ABI. Well, for one thing, I had never heard that. I had heard that I had a ruptured brain aneurysm, and that in my medical reports, doctors used phrases interchangeably, like subarachnoid hemorrhage is how we referred to it once in the program notes. Hemorrhagic stroke was a way that he referred, another doctor, the anesthesiologist, I think, referred to it in the notes. And so it was referred to a couple different ways, but geez, that was in 95. I started being here as a host in 2012, and the person called me an ABI, and I didn't know what that was. I had been called a lot of things, never an ABI in my life. That was stood for acquired brain injury. That's something that happens from within, a stroke, an aneurysm, an AVM, a brain tumor, from within. A TBI is something that originates from the outside, like hitting your head in a car accident, falls, are one of the number one causes. Concussions, domestic abuse, a lot of different ways to get a blow to the head from the outside. And it's interesting because when I first started here, that 12 and a half years ago, AVM, which is a different kind of internal ABI, if you want to call it that, seemed to marry with the aneurysm groups. aneurysm and AVM seem to, at least in my observation, and maybe Ron or somebody can clarify that more for me on the 21st, but it appears that a lot of the groups now, brain aneurysm and AVM, have merged. Then, on one of the brain injury associations or alliances or something, I was surprised to see a couple of years ago that now ABI is a form of TBI. So history changes things, I guess. Going back to those treatments, there was a couple non-starters, I think, after the coil. One of them, I remember, was called Onyx. I like that stone, so I remember the word. But it was something akin to crazy glue. And I don't really hear about that anymore, so I don't know if that was not successful or they found some of the other procedures to be more successful. There was something else in between there that I don't really hear about anymore, and now something newer. And Ron, you go to the aneurysm groups. It's like a bypass of some kind. We think of bypass being a heart bypass, but it's something akin to a bypass for the brain to treat an aneurysm. And if you know someone who's in one of the groups, we can have as many as we want of clips, coils, an AVM. I have an AVM coming, a coil coming, a clip or two coming. If you know anyone who's had that newer run procedure that's more like a bypass, if that's what it is, I'd kind of like to look at the different possible treatments and maybe have one of each here the night of the 21st to be able to talk about their experience with that particular treatment and where those treatments are used. And I think I'm going to keep it to survivors and not this month have someone from the association come. But I will give a couple statistics real quick. 1 in 50 people have an aneurysm, an estimated 6.5 million people in the United States have an unruptured brain aneurysm, or 1 in 50, like I said. The annual rate of rupture is approximately 8 to 10 per 100,000 people. 30,000 people in the United States suffer a brain aneurysm rupture each year. A brain aneurysm rupture happens every 18 minutes. Women are more likely than men to have a brain aneurysm, 3-to-2 ratio. Women, particularly those over 55, have a higher risk of brain aneurysm rupture than men, about 15 times the risk. There are almost 500,000 deaths worldwide each year caused by brain aneurysms, and half the victims are younger than 50. Approximately 15% of people with ruptured brain aneurysm die before reaching the hospital. Most of the deaths are due to rapid and massive brain injury from the initial bleed. And a lot of other stats. One thing that you can do is, well, tune in on the 21st. Another thing that you can do is to check out the website afound.org. That stands for Brain Aneurysm Foundation. .org, but they don't spell it completely out, BAFOUND.org, if you want to read some more stats and get information we survivors of brain aneurysm are aware every day. But we're trying to help others become aware, and that's what Awareness Month is about, I guess. I know when I had mine, I didn't know what a brain aneurysm was. No idea. Everybody, it's really amazing, you know, everybody knows what heart issues are or diabetes is or a lot of things, cancer. Not a lot of people know about, well, brain injury or TBI, and in this month, brain aneurysm. Very few people know much about brain aneurysm unless they've had one or they know somebody who's had one. And so time is of the essence. People tune in on the 21st for our Brain Aneurysm Awareness Show. And, you know, one thing I'm going to do real quick, I'm going to make time, got about 13 minutes left. Let me flip down here. I was going to play a song by someone else first, but I think I'm going to do this. This is really a bizarre turn of fate. Back when I wrote my book before I was a host here, I made a book trailer, and the music I chose to be on my book trailer wound up being my very first indie, one of my first indies on my playlist, and that was a lady who a lot of you know now, Leah West. You can find a lot of cool videos on Leah West or go to her website, leahwest.com. She's got some beautiful music, and I'm going to play you a song right now. But as fate would have it, she was a beautiful young single performer when I met her, and when we all met her. And halfway through, she got married to a wonderful man, Mark, had a beautiful little boy who now is a little man. I'll have to double check. I would say he's maybe 4 years old, but don't hold me to that. But her husband went out for a bicycle ride. So anyway, we had been knowing her quite a while. Single. Then she gets married. They have a beautiful child. Only had been married a couple of years. Her husband went out for a bicycle ride. Handsome, young, healthy man. Died of a brain aneurysm on that ride. Who would have thought? So Leah's been a single mom, and boy Blue will know his father only from memories and photographs and what his mom can share. And it was truly tragic. And isn't that weird karmic energy, I guess, that she would be one of the first indies brought to this, to my show, and know nothing about aneurysm, just be willing to let me play her music on the show, and that then she would be a victim to her husband, losing her husband to one. So funny, not funny, but, you know, ironic how the world turns. So I'm going to play a song by Leah West. Again, check her out at leahwest.com. This is Speechless.
But you quiver. Well, I've played the game and I've danced the dance. Sometimes life only gives you one chance. And I don't want to screw this thing up this time around.
Again, you can find her at leahwest.com. And let's see, next week will be Karen and I. And let's see, 9/11, we remember. God, I hate it when that comes up every year. That will be Sunday. So in remembrance of 9/11/2001, thoughts and prayers go out to the families, the survivors, and the event that's still killing people. I've had 9/11 shows usually every year. This year doesn't look like I'm going to be doing that. I've had first responders on. People that not only died on 9/11 in New York, Washington, or Pennsylvania, but people who are still dying that are first responders because of all of the poison that was in the air burning, and they're still dying. So that day it wasn't 2,000 people. I'm not sure if they added up all of the respiratory and other injuries that resulted in death and that are continuing to cause that, where the numbers would be, but that 9/11/2001 would still be killing people. 9/11/2022 is amazing. So thoughts and prayers are with you. Again, I want to thank my guest tonight, Simon T. Bailey. Check out his book. I'll have that website up right after the show. And I think I'm going to close the show with John Cruz. Haven't heard him for a long time, but this is relevant. Palm of your hand. Good night and God bless everyone. I will see you next Wednesday night. Have a good week. We'll be right back.